every heart clear. Have you ever been an outsider? Probably the closest I ever came was when we were about 30. Susie started a grad program at Wake Forest, and we moved to Winston-Salem, North Carolina. And I got a job as a high school history teacher at a little school about 20 miles west of town in a little town called Yadkinville, or Yagaville, if you're from there. And out in what I call tobacco land, where folks traditionally had made their living raising tobacco. And I was one of two, I think, for sure, non-Southerners on the staff of that high school. And for the most part, it was a wonderful experience for me. I made friends. We obviously spoke with a different dialect, and not only the teachers, but especially the kids, and I probably every period laughed about the way I said something or the way they said something. Sometimes I would write it out phonetically on the board what they said, and but it was all in good fun, and I made some really good friends there who seemed to accept my northernness pretty easily. Except for one kid especially, though. I think he was a senior, a young man that I say was roughly the size of a mule and whose disposition was also that of a mule. And my first day teaching at that school, it was sort of an open campus. There were like four different buildings, and you could walk through an outdoor courtyard from one building to the other. And I caught him smoking a cigarette as he walked from one to another. And just that year, they had changed the policy that you could no longer smoke on campus. This was 1984 in North Carolina. I'll tell you a lot of other things, like the fact that the buses were all driven by kids, but that's another illustration. But anyway, I caught this young man smoking a cigarette as he walked, and he was sort of testing things out. I was like, well, I'm not going to follow that new rule. So I nabbed him first day, took him into the principal's office, and he got expelled for a few days. That was not the end of the story. For the rest of, I guess he was a junior that year, the rest of my 2 years there, he was sort of at least a mild pain in the neck to me. And my assigned duty, you know, teachers, we all have some assigned duty during the day besides teaching our classes. And mine, believe it or not, I was the supervisor of the smoke hall. They had built a gazebo out in the schoolyard where kids who had the permission of their parents and wore a badge, 16 years or older, could smoke cigarettes. And so I spent half of my lunch time for those 2 years standing out there breathing all the secondhand smoke I could take in. And it was really a fun bunch of kids. Actually, for the most part, I enjoyed it. We had fun out there. They were good kids. Except my buddy was part of it. And every once in a while, I could just sort of hear in the background somebody going, bald-headed Yankee, bald-headed Yankee, bald-headed Yankee. Now, thinking back, I was only 30. Compared to now, I had some hair. I mean, he should see me now. But he would do this, but never when I could actually see him, or I wasn't going to enter into this with him, so I just sort of, for the most part, ignored it. But throughout those 2 years, from time to time, I could hear that bald-headed Yankee chorus starting up. But what occurs to me is that he took the issue he had with me, what he was angry with me about, and sort of made it an issue about where I was from and how I looked. Now, I realize I'm a white, male, Christian, straight, college-educated person in our society, so I am not an outsider in hardly any way at all. I have to recognize how privileged I have actually been most of my life. But that's not the case for everybody. There are many people who are treated and spoken of and behaved toward as though they are very much outsiders. Let's take the Jews, for instance. A long history, probably something like 4,000 years now, of being considered outsiders by much of the rest of the world. It's really interesting. Did this passage bother you a little bit when you heard it being read? Yeah, me too. That's why I said it's one of the more difficult Jesus stories to know how to preach. So we'll give it a try here. First thing we need to realize is that this Canaanite woman, Jesus and his band of followers there saw as an outsider. I don't know how else you can read it. And you should realize the history of the Bible story about Canaanites. It's interesting, in the Matthew version of this story, she is named as a Canaanite woman, whereas in Mark's story, which is probably more original, a Syro-Phoenician woman. What's the difference? Well, Canaan, this is the only place, by the way, that anybody in the New Testament is referred to as a Canaanite. The Canaanites were the ancient enemies of Israel. These are the people that they believe God told them to move into this land and take over their land and kill every one of them. And who they were spoken of as idolaters. And by the way, the history maybe shows that the Bible story is in some ways are there to teach theological points rather than history. It's a long history of this battle between these people. They were seen as hated enemies. Now, Jesus knew when they crossed over into that region of Sidon and Tyre that he was moving into Gentile territory. That was not an accident. He had just really ticked off all the Jewish religious leaders, and he decided it was time for a break, and he needed to go somewhere to get away from that. So he moved into this Gentile territory and thought maybe they could get a little bit of R&R and before they prepared to move on. But this Canaanite woman, in their perspective, was an outsider, even though they were the outsiders in that territory. You know, the way outsiders are treated has had serious and profound and lasting consequences in the history of this world. Look around us. Think about how many of the terrible things that we see in the news, both here and abroad, have to do with people seeing others as outsiders. They don't belong. Think of the genocides. All the genocides of the world basically come from this idea. You're not one of us. So you don't deserve to be treated like one of us. And make no mistake about it, how we treat outsiders makes a long-term difference. I mean, it has repercussions that go on and on and on, with retaliation on one side and then on the other. And look at the history of the Middle East. Look at what's been going on between Israel and all of its neighbors since its, well, of course, since its beginning in 1948, but generation after generation before that of violence. And you're not one of us. We've got it right. And, of course, many other places. I was reading a book years ago by Tony Campolo, and he told a couple of stories, one about exclusion and how it affects the way we live with outsiders, and the other about inclusion. The first story is the story of Gandhi. And you may know that Gandhi was, in his younger time, a law student in South Africa. And being a dark-skinned Asian, he decided he would give Christianity a try. So he went to the Anglican church there in the city where he was living and sat down in the back row. And in a couple of minutes, he felt a tap on his shoulder, and it was an usher who told him that he asked him to leave because colored people were not to worship in this church. Apparently, there was another church for them. And then Gandhi looked back on this years later and said, that poor usher, he thought he was taking a colored man out of an Anglican worship service. What he was actually doing was ushering India out of the British Empire. Think about it. Another South Africa story. South Africa, I suppose, makes a good illustration of this because the contrast was so stark there for so long. Desmond Tutu. Campolo said he was having a conversation with Tutu one time. They were both speaking at an event of some kind, and he was kidding with him and said, "Why aren't you a Baptist? Why did you become an Anglican priest instead of a Baptist?" And Desmond Tutu told this story about when he was a kid. He and his mother were walking down the sidewalk there in South Africa, and the custom was that any time a white person approached on the sidewalk, that black folks were supposed to step off the sidewalk and allow them to pass. And that just became their common practice. If a white person was coming up the sidewalk toward you, you got out of the way and let them pass. And he said he and his mother were walking down the sidewalk one day, and they saw a large man in a black suit coming their way. And when he saw them, he stepped off the sidewalk. And when he and his mother passed, he looked at his mother and tipped her hat as a sign of respect to her. After they had passed, Desmond Tutu asked his mother, "Why did that white man do that?" And she said, "Because he's an Anglican priest and because he's a man of God." And Desmond Tutu said, "Right then, I realized I want to be an Anglican priest. I want to be a man of God." How we treat people who feel like outsiders has profound, serious, and lasting effects. Let's get back to the Jesus story here. Jesus says something disturbing. "I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." You know, running all through the Bible, through the Old Testament, are two themes, I think. We can, at least these two themes, that are both there in tension with each other all the way through. The first one is the particularity of the Jews, that God, their sense that God had chosen them among all the peoples of the world for a particular relationship with God, and then a mission that flowed from that. Okay, there's an old saying, I can't remember who it's from, but sort of with this tension back and forth between Jews and Gentiles. How odd of God to choose the Jews. And of course, the Jewish response is, not odd of God, goyim anoyim. Goyim means Gentiles, for those that may not be aware of that. But there are two strands basically running through the biblical record. One, as I said, is this idea of the particularity of the Jews, that when God, like anyone else who does something, doesn't do it in general, some particular tool or instrument must be chosen to accomplish that task. That's the idea, that God enters into this covenant with Israel, first with Abraham. And part of that covenant then is that he's going to give them this land. Where, who lives? The Canaanites. You're to go in and drive them out, and this is going to be your land. So you've got that side of the story, the way they tell their story. Along with the other part of the covenant that's just as real, though, he says, through your descendants, I will bless all the families of the earth. And you know, the Hebrew prophets especially emphasized that part of it. How God would bring all people together on God's holy mountain. And there would, you know, all those wonderful passages about beating our swords into plowshares and the lion or the lion lying down with the lamb. This idea that God is making something for everybody here to bring us all together. So Jesus comes then as the heir of that story with this mission that God has sent him to complete here. And his idea, his way of seeing it is that I must first accomplish this with the people of Israel so that then this new people can open it up to everybody else. And if you look at the Gospel of Matthew, it's sort of like bookends. Right there at the first, after the birth of Jesus, remember that story about the Magi, what we call the wise men, coming to see the Christ child? Those are Gentile, probably rulers of some kind. A picture of Gentiles coming and bowing down and worshiping Christ. And the story ends with the resurrected Jesus on the mountain telling his disciples to do what? Go out into all the world. Bring all people into a relationship of discipleship with me and immerse them in this triune, this life of Father, Son, and Spirit that I have given you. Okay, so it starts and finishes. We know how the story ends. And of course, the Pentecost story where the Spirit comes on those people and suddenly they're talking to people of all languages and sharing the good news of Jesus with them. So we know where the story's headed. So one person I was reading suggested, what if this woman was asking for the end of the story right here in the middle of it? And I thought what Jan said was great, because Jesus was 30 to maybe 35 years old when this happened. Did you stop learning when you were 30 years old? A person who does that, we say at the very least, is an arrested person, right? Jesus was fully human. Is that so far-fetched that Jesus perhaps learned from this experience too? That he saw something about his mission that he was not focusing on before that? The woman comes before him and she has great faith, he says. She calls him Messiah, the word that means Messiah. She's way ahead of his disciples. They're not even calling him that yet. They have this little banter about, you don't give the children's bread to the dogs under the table. And she has the wit to say, yeah, but you know what? They're also part of the master's household, and they get to eat from what falls from the table. In other words, we're part of the household here, too. And her little girl will now be seen not just as a puppy under the table, but as a little girl. That's the point. I can't work out all the problems with this. It's a difficult passage, these words that come from Jesus. But what he does, the way it ends, is the point. Faith makes you an insider, basically. That's how you get in. Great faith. And a willingness to be humble. She didn't stand up and demand her rights. A great Christian, I think it was Dwight Moody, said, the only person that goes away from God empty is the person that's full of themselves. This woman emptied herself, and she received grace. Jesus answered her, "Great is your faith. Let it be done to you as you wish." And her daughter was instantly healed. You know what? In this Jesus story, we were all outsiders. We're Gentiles. It was through this story that the Apostle Paul could later say, "In Christ there is no Jew or Gentile." male or female, or any of the other inside or outsider things that we human beings like to make such a big deal of. In Christ, one family of God. I think I'm done.